This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today we have two interviews with candidates running for State House. Coming up, Libertarian Logan Fleckenstein running in the 60th District, which includes the city of Kalamazoo. But first, Annie Brown was the Democratic candidate for State House in the 66th District 2 years ago. She is running again for the seat to represent Van Buren County as well as Northwest Kalamazoo County in the State House. Annie Brown, welcome back. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Gordon. Great to be here.
Please introduce yourself, or maybe more accurately to say in this case, reintroduce yourself to the audience.
Thank you. I was born in a small farming town in northern Michigan, and I attended Hope College. And Hope College has an excellent semester in Washington program. So I participated in that semester, and I interned in Senator Carl Levin's office on Capitol Hill. And after that, I stayed in Washington, and I waited patiently, and eventually I got a job in Senator Levin's office, and I worked there for several years. And then I decided I wanted to return to Michigan, which I loved and missed, and work for a newspaper. So I applied to every daily paper in Michigan, and the South Haven Tribune hired me, and I moved there in 1985. I met my husband there, and we loved it, and we raised our three children there. Once my kids were in school, I realized that too much money was going to administration and not enough into the classroom where it belonged. So I decided to run for school board, and I've served on the South Haven School Board for 12 years. During my time on the school board, I realized how much money we were losing because of cuts that Lansing was making year after year. So after participating in the Michigan Political Leadership Program, I decided to run for state representative, and I'm running now for the second time. And I actually never stopped running. In fact, I was talking to somebody in Bangor, and they said, you know, basically you lost in November, and then in December you were back in our Santa Claus parade. So I've never stopped attending events and being active in different communities from Covert to Cooper Township. And I keep listening to people. So that's where I am right now.
So you mentioned education in there and the idea that too much money, as you saw it, was going to administration, not enough into the classroom. Is that still the case?
No, I think that that has changed because in the last 12 years, superintendents have realized that they need to make their own cuts in their administration and in those buildings. It's a fact of life now that every school has to make deep cuts, and there is no room for any fluff or extra money to be spent on administration. So I don't know any superintendent in Michigan who is not being very careful and frugal with state funds now. It's just become a sad fact of life.
So if you're going to put more state money into education, where does it come from? Do you raise taxes? Are there other areas of the budget you would take the money from?
Actually, there's a surplus in Michigan that the governor is holding in his rainy day account, and that can go back into our schools. We need to take a good look at the corrections budget too, because it's important to keep Michiganders safe and keep the most violent criminals incarcerated. But we need to say to the corrections budget, you need to make some cuts, because the government is saying to schools, you're only getting about $7,200 per pupil. But in the corrections department, they're budgeting $30,000 per prisoner. So that's not fair. We need to invest in our students. Build more schools, not more prisons.
You mentioned the rainy day fund in that answer about education. you know, the argument for keeping a pretty healthy surplus on hand is that we don't know when the next downturn is coming. And in Michigan, we have tended to get hit harder than the rest of the nation when there is some sort of recession or some sort of an economic dip. So is there an argument for keeping a pretty healthy rainy day fund on hand for the state?
My husband and I own a small business in South Haven, and we know that we have to spend money to make money. The money in the rainy day fund is the equivalent of stuffing money under a mattress. We need to take that and put it to use, use it to get the roads fixed, put people back to work, and that will help prevent any downturns in the economy, and it will help getting the economy back on track in Michigan.
How would you prevent the next Flint?
You know, I wrote an editorial about this a while ago, and I said in my column, Flint can be any town. And last night I was going door to door in the South Haven area, out in the country, and a person came to their house to fix their water system. And he said, you're not drinking this water, are you? Because so many parts of our district are subdivisions that were built on orchards where they use pesticides, and that seeped into the groundwater. So now it's not safe for people who have wells. So I think we have to be very careful preventing another Flint. And we have to make sure that schools are being tested, because we have so many school buildings that were built back in the 60s, and it's time to test the water in those too. So I think with Flint, I think it goes that emergency managers are not always the best answer to these problems. They don't know the territory, and they have made some big mistakes in Michigan.
So what should the state do when a city does fall on tough financial times? Because ultimately, the state can be on the hook for a city if they were to, say, have to declare bankruptcy. So what's the solution for the state, if not an emergency manager, to make sure that a city continues to exist and doesn't become a huge financial liability for the whole state?
I think that emergency managers can provide a very positive advantage to cities by serving as a financial or finance consultant to the city to help them get back on track. But when you neglect cities for decades, and when you withhold revenue sharing year after year and take away millions of dollars that belong in the city and village coffers, then you're going to have problems like Flint. And I would hate for this to be a domino effect in Michigan. And that's why we need to get Michigan back on track and keep investing in our cities with the revenue sharing that's been withheld.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Annie Brown. She is the Democratic candidate for State House in the 66th District. That includes all of Van Buren County and also part of Kalamazoo County. Do you think that the state needs any reform to the way it pays for auto insurance, the no-fault system that we have for auto insurance? Would you favor any sort of reform there?
I would, and that is interesting that you ask me, because when I go door to door, I tell people about myself, and then I ask them, what is your biggest concern in Michigan? And at door after door, people tell me auto insurance. It's way too high, and it's another burden that our taxpayers have to bear. The important thing about the no-fault auto insurance is that it ends up taking care of our Michiganders who have been in awful accidents and need care for their catastrophic injuries. Yes, and I've seen that. And I know friends who are benefiting from that. But the thing that I wonder is, you know, we really need to look at that when car insurance in Indiana is so much affordable than across the border here in Michigan. And we need to look at the cost for, you know, the medical care to in what we're paying for. Why are MRIs in Michigan thousands of dollars, but in other states, they are hundreds of dollars? And we need to look at all of that, all of the factors that are contributing to the high cost of auto insurance.
But as you noted, I mean, Michigan has a very generous payout for people who are injured in these catastrophic accidents. No other state in the country that I'm aware of has anything really close to what Michigan offers. Are we doing it right? Should the other 49 states be trying to replicate that? Or is that not the right way to go?
I think we're doing it right, because I would hate to, you know, tell a family who has a son or a daughter who had a brain injury in an accident that they can't be helped with this high cost of caring for them for the rest of their lives. But we need to look at other aspects of the insurance and the other factors that are spiking the cost so high.
Does money have too much influence over what happens in Lansing?
Yes, it does. I think it's very sad about how much money is involved. And I'm part of that process now. So it's just unbelievable how much is involved. And it's particularly sad when we see that politicians are relying on huge donations from groups like the Koch brothers and the DeVos family. And in my campaign, I talk about kitchen table values. These are the values that you and I learned, Gordon, growing up around a kitchen table in the kitchen. And at that kitchen table, I want to include ordinary families from the district. And I'm going to take my cue and my knowledge from them, not from billionaires and millionaires and highfalutin lobbyists. That's the way good government works.
This is a district which, in recent memory, has been a Republican district, and usually by a pretty healthy margin. You got 42.5% of the vote 2 years ago. Why should people believe that 2016 will be different from 2014?
When I talk to voters, they are really not interested in whether I'm a Republican or a Democrat. They want a legislator who is going to work hard for them, work tirelessly, and communicate often. And that's what the concerns are. There are many Republicans I've talked to who said, you know, Annie, I've always been a Republican, but it's time for change. And just last weekend at Pawpaw, a man walked up to me and he said, you know what? You are the only Democrat that I have ever voted for, and I'm going to vote for you again in November.
Does it still, however, remain that, you know, the numbers are what they are, that, you know, that there's more registered Republicans usually in a district like the 66th? I guess, how many people do you think you can persuade? And, you know, do the external factors matter in a campaign? In other words, if there's a big Democratic win at the top of the ticket, does that help you? If it's closer, does that make it a little more problematic?
Actually, the facts show that Van Buren County voted for President Obama both times. And the statistics show that in presidential years, the 66th district becomes a little bit more Democrat, 50.2%. So we're excited about those statistics, and we've done the math, and we're working hard.
Annie Brown, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Gordon. Great to be here.
Annie Brown is the Democratic candidate for state representative in the 66th State House District. That includes all of Van Buren County, as well as Northwest Kalamazoo County. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The 60th State House District includes the city of Kalamazoo, along with parts of Portage and Kalamazoo Township. Logan Fleckenstein is the Libertarian candidate in the 60th State House District. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Logan Fleckenstein. I was born here, actually, in Kalamazoo, 1990, December 4th, 25 years old. I then moved around a bit in Southwest Michigan. I was in Allegan for my high school career a little bit, and then moved back here to Kalamazoo to pursue a college education at Western Michigan University. It was an incredible university. Way higher, broke all my expectations. It was really a good time. I really had a good time here. I just graduated from here a year or so ago with a plus political science degree with minors in sociology and philosophy. And so now I've just been really pursuing my dream I've had really all along, that since as long as I can remember, at least from the time I was 13 onward, that is pursuing political office. I care deeply about society and the system, and I want to do what I can to what I think is important to in order to preserve that system and in order to make it better, improve it. So that's why I really want, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Specifically, what would you do to improve things if you were elected to the state house?
I think the biggest thing right now facing this state and quite frankly, this country is the criminal justice system. I think it's really broken, quite frankly. I think when you look at the statistics, everything going on from the police brutality to civil forfeiture and just so many different issues going on, it's just, I think the criminal justice system just needs almost a complete overhaul. I mean, I think the principles behind it are good, innocent until proven guilty, the juries and whatnot, like these sort of things we take for granted, I think are good, but just how it's being implemented today is just disastrous, in my opinion.
Okay, civil asset forfeiture is something we've done a couple of interviews on. I think people kind of understand the idea that you would have your property taken away from you in cases many times before you actually have been convicted.
Yeah.
So what are some other things, though, that you would do to address the criminal justice system? I mean, are we locking too many people up to begin with?
For sure. I think that goes without saying. I think throwing someone in a jail cell, unless they have done truly something like violent, egregious, fraudulent, something that truly is wrecking the very core of society and their action, I don't see why you should throw them into jail. I think throwing someone into jail should be the absolute last resort. We should try any other possible option before that, in my opinion.
What are the other options that you would pursue then besides jail time for somebody?
I think you just have, even something as simple as a probation I'm just open to trying new and different things, or even how we approach the jail system. Like even like systems like in Norway and Finland, where they seem to be taking it more, not as we're trying to punish people. We're trying to show them in a way that isn't like devaluating them as a human. Because that's, I think, the most important thing. A lot of times we punish people, we're devaluing their humanity, especially in the ways the American jail system works. It's not the best of conditions, we'll say, right now. So I just think taking the steps that are necessary and just experimenting, even being willing to experiment with new innovative ideas. I mean, I'm certainly open to new ideas, and I'm hoping to bring some, trying to different models of criminal justice systems.
If you're elected to the state legislature, what would you do to prevent the next situation like the water crisis in Flint?
Well, I guess this is kind of a plug for the Libertarian candidate, for President Gary Johnson. He proposed something very interesting that I wish our state would do. When he was governor, he started doing this, I guess, a sort of meet and greet every month or so, or like an open office, I guess is a better term for it. He would have anyone from the state of New Mexico, where he governed, come in, and if they have an issue or some sort of complaint, they can go directly to him and complain. And he did this like once a month, just had people come in and just give their complaints and be like, hey, there's this problem, or hey, there's that problem. And he would be like, oh, I didn't know this was a problem. And you go and address it. So just even something like that simple, I think would be a good start in the right direction in preventing these sort of things. Just listen to the people. The people know what's happening. They do. And if you get a number of complaints about something, act on it.
Do you believe that the state's current emergency manager law is the best way to address financially troubled cities?
I don't think so, because I think that's just really implementing like a miniature, not to sound exaggeratory, but almost like a little miniature dictator in some sense, you know, because they're granted a lot of these powers and they're unelected. And to me, the problem with those sort of people is I don't see how they're really that accountable at the end of the day. And I don't see how they're really beholden to the people. Because even if, you know, the city's in financial trouble, you still need to be beholden to the people. Just because you've gone bankrupt doesn't mean our whole laws and system of governance should just be tossed out the window. There needs to be other ways of addressing this that don't violate the rights of people. And I think just this emergency management thing, I think ultimately violates the rights of people.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Logan Fleckenstein. He is a candidate for the 60th State House District, the Libertarian candidate for the district, which includes the city of Kalamazoo. Should the state's anti-discrimination laws include protections for sexual orientation and gender identity?
Well, and actually, I just was answering a questionnaire about this, and which pretty much asked the same thing. And in there, I was really, my biggest thing is not even necessarily whether they should be included in there or not. My biggest thing is how the discriminatory laws work in the first place. I think one of the biggest problems with these discriminatory laws is that because they try to cover such a broad range of different like private interactions and, you know, the government interactions, like interactions they have with the government, I think because they've tried to focus on like both of these things at the same time, I don't think the laws have been working that well. I mean, when I look around me, I still see plenty of discrimination everywhere. I still see plenty of racism, sexism, homophobia, whatever you want to call, whatever sort of phobia you want to throw in there. I still think it's very prevalent in the society overall, and even in Michigan. So to me, I would like rather just to keep it all focused on the government. And once we do that, keep these discriminatory laws focused on the public and like how the government is going to treat its citizens. Then yes, obviously to me, it's no-brainer, include the LGBTQ community. There's no reason not to.
But you're saying that you think a private business should be able to do what it wants when it comes to discrimination.
Yeah, I mean, within reason. Obviously, there's certain circumstances where I think that you could argue that shouldn't be the case. For example, if a private entity is getting a lot of benefit from the government, whether it be like, you know, if the government gives this, let's say the government gives this entity, you know, $500,000 or something like that a year. I think to me that automatically disqualifies it from being able to be discriminatory in a way it would be able to be otherwise. As soon as you get any sort of assistance from the government, I think that is enough room to say, well, these rules and regulations that apply to the government in terms of discrimination and whatnot applies to you as well.
At the risk of going off on a tangent here, however, isn't this sort of the battle we had in the 60s and when there were diners down south that said, we don't want to serve black people?
Yeah.
Eventually, the country kind of concluded that that was wrong, that if you're going to open a diner, you have to serve whoever walks up. You can't say, sorry, you're black or, you know, you're Hispanic, et cetera. I mean, isn't that sort of, I guess I'm wondering if you disagree with the conclusion in that case.
I think it was more of just getting rid of the bad laws that did the most good. I don't necessarily think throwing in the additional laws did really much good. It was just, in fact, just getting rid of Jim Crow was a huge accomplishment, in my opinion. And just socially trying to move the country in a way where I think it's more of a personal thing when it comes to these sort of discrimination things. That's the thing about it. If you really want a society in which has little to no like discrimination in these ways we're talking about, obviously like racism, homophobia, and blah, 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 you have to, I think, just address it by individual case. And just as a person, as an individual, as a, you know, a human, just reach out to them. Make them realize, like, yeah, these sort of discriminations are wrong. But I don't think the government is per se an effective means of getting that done.
So should a landlord be able to say that he doesn't want to rent to a same-sex couple?
Well, once again, like, assuming they don't get any sort of government, that this landlord's not getting any sort of government benefit, which in today's society, you know, with how things are working out, that might not be the case. There's an easy chance.
Let's assume, for the sake of argument, they don't get direct subsidy from the government. They can deny. Should they be able to deny accommodations to a biracial couple?
If that's the way they feel, yeah. I mean, I'll say this, though. I would be definitely one of the first people out there protesting that person and saying this person is wrong for doing that and enlightening people, just letting people know, like, hey, you got this, you know, jerk over here who's not, you know, selling houses or real estate to gay couples or, you know, couples, you know, mixed race couples. Yeah. So I think those sort of acts are wrong. I don't even get it. What it drives a person to be that way. But if they want to act that way, like I said earlier, I'm not going to use violence or coercion to force a person to be, you know, not a bigot.
Do you think that money has too much influence over public policy?
Well, yeah, we got this pay for play. I mean, like with Clinton, that's like a national stage. That's obvious to show that, you know, we have lobbyists and all this, the typical crony capitalism story that we've heard over and over again. I think there's a reason why this story exists, because it's true. I think that's a huge problem. And it's the way I think we solve that, though, is by making the government less powerful and less influential. Because once we make the government less powerful and less influential, there's less reason for these lobbyists to come in and bribe the politicians to enact for certain laws and regulations in the first place.
But the money that actually comes in.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with that going on, how do you get there to making the government less powerful if we have this infrastructure, as you say, that's already there of lobbyists and money?
I mean, a big part of that thing would be, first of all, just transparency, just forcing, especially when you have these, you know, hundreds of thousands plus, you know, millions of dollar PACs, you know, donating millions of dollars to candidates and or hundreds of thousands, depending on local or state or federal. Just making it transparent, like, how much did this corporation or this person give to this person? I think transparency alone will do a huge, will help us go in huge steps forward in the right direction and just calling out these people who are accepting bribes, and also the bribers themselves, calling them out too.
So this is a district which has gone overwhelmingly Democratic now for as long as anyone can remember. John Hoadley, I believe, was around 70% of the vote in 2014, winning his first term. Why is this the place where the libertarians can make their case and show people that there's another way?
Well, mind you, I'll admit, first of all, I don't think any libertarian could run this district because of it being so blue and being so leaning left. I will admit, as a libertarian, I probably would lean more left in my approach to things as opposed to other libertarians. I still believe in free markets and all this, the platform, and of its entirety, I pretty much believe verbatim, obviously with some little exceptions here and there, but very minor details. But just in my approach, especially since I am, you know, sociology and political science, I understand, like, social issues a lot. I think a lot better than some of my party mates. Not to say the party itself is bad about these per se. I think they're actually remarkably good. That's why I am a libertarian. But I think I can make the case for why actually the libertarian agenda is actually better for pushing these progressive platform points that have been an issue for a while. And I ultimately agree with lots of what progressives have to say. My biggest disagreement is simply I just don't want to use the government to get there. That's really all it is. And just I want to show people, like, that actually is the better route to go. If you don't, using government is not the solution to these issues.
Logan Fleckenstein, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Logan Fleckenstein is the Libertarian candidate in the 60th State House District. That includes the city of Kalamazoo, along with parts of the city of Portage and Kalamazoo Township. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.